Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is a convention call-in. I'm Brian Lehrer. For most of this week, you're hearing the politicians and the pundits say whatever they have to say. This hour, it's for you to talk to everybody out there, and maybe for some of you to talk to each other. We will have a few call-in questions each night and see if we can get some good conversations going. Our themes will be money tonight, race tomorrow night, and war on Thursday night. And we'll do the same thing for the Democrats during their convention next week. So, money. One of the reasons Donald Trump won the nomination is there are millions of Americans who feel like the economy is rigged against you and he's the guy to get you back in the game or build it back for your kids. Of course, many Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton supporters and others felt that way about your candidate. We know, obviously. But so do many Trump supporters about the man who is becoming, very shortly, the official Republican candidate for president of the United States. So our first call-in is for anyone who is supporting Donald Trump because of the economy. If you are one of those Americans, call in right now to get on the air at 1-800-543-2-543, 800-543-2-543. Just count it down, 1-800-543-2-543. Tell us your own economic story and tell us why you think Trump will make the American economy great again. You know, the stereotype of a Trump supporter is an older white male who's lost a manufacturing job and is angry at trade agreements that allow American companies to export those jobs and then import the goods that you used to make to sell back to you and everyone. And you're angry that so many immigrants are coming in also who undercut your wage prospects if you do get a job. That's not the only kind of economic Trump supporter. That's the stereotype of one. But for anyone listening right now, does that sound kind of like you? If so, give us a call and tell people your economic story and why you're supporting Donald Trump as the best candidate for the economy, for American prosperity. 1-800-543-2-543, 1-800-543-2-543. And as I said, the exit polls and other polls show that that is not the only economic profile of a Trump supporter. According to the data crunching site 538, for example, the average Trump supporter makes $72,000 a year, so a little above the national average. And we know Trump supporters are not just people who never went to college. There is a whole other group who, as Time magazine describes it, thought college was supposed to make the difference between making it and not making it in America. And some of you are angry, too, because the promise of a middle-class lifestyle based on your college degree has not been fulfilled. And some of you think Trump is the ticket to expanding opportunity. Does that sound like you? Give us a call on this convention call-in at 1-800-543-2-543. Count it down, 1-800-543-2-543. Our first call-in tonight, since it is Republican Convention Week, is for Trump supporters whose primary reason for voting him for him is money, the economy, better jobs and better wages and more opportunity for business owners through his America First approach and employees. We'll take Trump skeptics later. But while your calls are coming in, here's an example of the kind of thing Trump says that's intended to push those buttons. This is from just last Saturday, as he was introducing Mike Pence as his running mate.
I have a friend who's a great builder. What he builds is plants. That's all he does is build plants. He doesn't build buildings. He builds plants. It's the biggest in the world, from what I hear. I said, how's business? I was with him the other day. How's business? He goes, unbelievable. I said, really? Wow. I'm surprised. Why is it unbelievable? Because I think of him as building in this country. He said, Donald, what we're doing in Mexico, you won't believe. I said, what do you mean? He said, we're building plants in Mexico, the likes of which we've never seen. I said, what about this country? Not much. Not much. That's the expression. He said exactly that. Not much. I said, but Mexico? He said, you've never seen anything like it. It's incredible. Folks, that's going to stop. We're going to go reverse it. We're going to bring our jobs back to this country. We can't be the stupid people anymore.
Donald Trump on Saturday. And who knows if that's even true, if there is a friend or if the plant building business is really booming in Mexico, but not so much here. We haven't precisely fact-checked it. We don't know who that guy is supposed to be. But that's how he's campaigning, and that's how he's relating. So call in if you are a Trump supporter because you think he's going to make America prosperous again. 1-800-543-2-543. 1-800, then count it down, 543-2-543. Our first caller is someone we invited to join in for a few minutes. He is Randy Bradley of Omaha, and if I've got my information right, he owns two Burger King franchises, one in Iowa and one in Missouri. Thanks very much for coming on, Mr. Bradley. Do I have that right so far?
Yes, you sure do, and thanks for having me on this evening.
So how's business?
My business is real good. I've been very fortunate with my people. It's all about people. I guess probably the easiest way to make that clear is my restaurants average $800,000 a year more each than the average Burger King. So I think we've been pretty successful.
Is that net or is that what you take? I mean, is that
that's gross sales.
Gross sales.
Gross sales, yeah.
Now, I gather you don't like the Democrats' proposals for a higher minimum wage for fast food workers and their proposed requirements for you to provide paid sick leave. How big a factor are those things in your voting decision?
Those things are extremely important. Labor is already one of my highest costs. And, you know, the easiest way to put it is if they want a $15 an hour minimum wage, if you pay that to someone producing $12 an hour, that's a recipe for bankruptcy. And then what will happen, those employees lose their jobs, and they find out that the true minimum wage is zero.
On the wage, though, many Americans on the other side would say the social contract should be if you work full-time, you should be paid enough to be out of poverty and not have other taxpayers have to subsidize the workers that they'd say you're supposed to be paying. What would you say to those folks?
Well, I'd say basically the same thing. You can't pay someone more than what they produce. This is not a charitable foundation. The government won't allow me to print money. I only have the money that my customers give me to pay people. And the overwhelming majority of our employees don't need to make a living wage. Of course, several of our employees make very much so a living wage. All of my managers started as minimum wage crew members mm-hmm. with me. I started in the restaurant business as a dishwasher. I needed a promotion to become a busboy. So I started at $1.65 an hour washing dishes. That's a very broad paying that kind of wage to everybody in low-skilled positions is very costly, very broad when the overwhelming majority don't need it. For those few who are, for instance, say, trying to raise a family on a minimum wage and that, we have a much more efficient, more targeted device to use, and that's the earned income tax credit. And that way we could reach those people without doing so much damage to private sector businesses.
Randy, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Oh, you know, let me ask you one more thing, actually, because
sure.
These issues break pretty neatly along party lines. I don't think any of the Republicans were for the increased mandates during the primary season. So was Trump the best of the lot for you all along for some reason?
No, I did not start as a Trump supporter. And I'll say I don't know exactly what Donald Trump will do. I don't know that anybody does. But I do know that he understands what businesses need to create jobs and grow our American economy. Now, Hillary Clinton has been pretty specific about what she intends to do. And those are policies that are going to be pretty damaging, both on the business side and the worker side. We have to remember there's two sides to this picture for our economy. To employ more people, first of all, create a job or make someone more productive so that they can be paid more. Businesses have to invest in equipment, technology, facilities. Hillary Clinton has made it very clear she intends to increase taxes on investment, increase regulations, and every dollar that you take from a so-called rich person or a business is another dollar that can't be used to create a job or make someone more productive.
Right.
And on the worker side, if you look at immigration, she's made clear she's really going to open the gates here, and that's going to increase the number of low-skilled people being brought into our country, which will further damage the prospects for those of our citizens who haven't yet developed high-tech skills. Yeah. So on both the business side and the worker side, her policies really bother me.
Randy Bradley of Omaha owns Burger King franchises in Iowa and Missouri. Thanks so much, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Now let's go to some of our other callers. Timmy in Vernon, New Jersey. You're on the air. Hi, Timmy. Timmy, you there? All right. Let's see about John in Prince George's County, Maryland. John, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hi there. You're on the air.
Oh, good. The reason I vote, I'm an African-American Republican. And the reason I voted for Trump in Maryland was because I'm a small businessman. My family's always owned restaurants and bars. And it just seems to me I voted for Trump because somehow he made me think I would have access to capital. And I'm going to sound as though I'm jealous, but the Ethiopians that come in from Africa and other parts of the world, they seem to be coming in with capital. And then when they form their restaurants, and you probably don't know anything about Washington, D.C., but there's so many Ethiopian restaurants, but very few African-American-owned restaurants. And they seem to have capital, and some just makes me think for a second that maybe I might be preferred over other communities.
So Trump might help you because, what, he would limit immigration?
Well, not so much that, and I don't want to sound petty, which I probably am, but that's one issue. What I want to say is that there's got to be a way where people look to invest in regular Americans, especially African Americans, who need capital, not loans. Mm-hmm. I mean, investment capital. I mean, the equation, you know, is for us lacks investment in capital.
And John, I'm gonna leave it there, and I really appreciate your call. I'm gonna leave it there with John because, though this is a convention call-in about money this hour, we're going to go live to the floor for just a minute for some breaking news, and WNYC's Matt Katz has it. Hi, Matt. What's happening?
And momentarily, Brian, Donald J. Trump will become the official nominee of the Republican Party, and you're hearing the crowd now. It just happened. Donald J. Trump Jr., the nominee's son, delivered the votes he needed from New York to give Trump the nomination. He ended with, congratulations, Dad, we love you. And now there's a standing ovation here in Cleveland.
Because they've been going state by state, and once you reach a certain number of delegates, you're officially over the 50% mark, and so you're officially the nominee. And it was New York, of all states, that put him over? Was that a coincidence?
No, it is not a coincidence. They rigged the system a little bit. They had some states skip. So they would not put Donald over the edge, and they worked it so New York would be the state to give Trump the nomination. This has become something of a tradition in recent years that the home state for the nominee puts the nominee over the edge. And now you have the master of ceremonies here is making the official announcement. So we're going to get another even bigger ovation now that it is official. So at about 7:13. Eastern time, Trump becomes the official Republican nominee.
I noticed, by the way, that the New York delegation, while everybody's standing and cheering, has the front and center seating section.
Now we're getting New York, Brian.
And why not?
Right.
Like the end of a Yankee game.
That's right.
But, Matt, the New York delegation has the front and center seating section at this convention, even though New York is a classically blue state. I don't even know if you can still hear me, but is that just because it's Donald Trump's home state or because he's trying to put it more in play in the general election?
No, that was a favor to Donald. They definitely have the best seat in the House. New Jersey is next to it. And, you know, he's talked about winning New York. It doesn't necessarily seem like the most likely of scenarios in the general election, but he believes that it's in play. And now there's a bit of a pause here as an instrumental version of New York, New York plays. And there's the big screen is going with some faux fireworks. and a big words that say over the top, which, you know, I guess could have many, many different meanings.
You could take that many ways at this particular convention. Over the top, as Donald Trump becomes the official Republican candidate. WNYC's Matt Katz, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian. Start spreading the news.
Get used to it, folks, like it or not. And the polls show most people don't like it. But he is not merely the presumptive nominee anymore. We can drop that term and just call him the Republican candidate for President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. But this is a convention call-in about money this hour. We're taking calls from Trump supporters. If you're a Trump supporter because of economic issues, we'll take Trump skeptics on the economy later in the hour. But let's hear from another supporter right now, John in Hoboken. John, you're on the air. Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
Definitely going for Trump. He's a great businessman. He's going to be logical with our trade agreements. He pays his employees very well. So the working man is going to be respected. And at the end of the day, he's going to be tough on foreign policy. There's no question in my mind. He's going to get fair deals done.
Were you always a Trump supporter in the primary season, too?
Pretty much, yeah. I just liked his logic. I liked the fact that he wasn't a politician. Where he doesn't have special interests, going to tell him what to do. He's going to represent the people that got him in, the people that voted for him, the working people of this country that sustain this country.
John, thank you very much. Ken in Alexandria, Virginia, you're on the air. Hi, Ken.
Hello. I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you just fine.
I'll be darned. Well, I got lucky this time. I really only have two reasons for thinking Trump is the right man for the job at this point in time. One of them is that he owes no one anything. He's coming in on his own, almost self-funded. In other words, none of the special interest groups, none of the flag waivers, none of the influencing bodies are going to have much control over him.
Although a slight fact check,
you're getting
a slight fact check, check on that. It's different than in the primary season. He's going to need a lot more money than he spent in the primary season to run the general, and he has set up some fundraising operations. There's a pro-Trump super PAC or more than one. So he's going to be taking money in the general election. I don't know that it's going to be as much as Hillary Clinton will take or has taken so far, but he is going to take some money just for accuracy.
Well, maybe he will, and probably he will. But I think we can safely assume that Mrs. Clinton has already been bought and paid for. I don't think she's got an original thought in her head. It's what she's been told to say. She's a carbon copy of just about every other candidate that's ever been pushed on the country. There really hasn't been anybody totally independent, probably since George Washington. But we will see what happens there. But the other reason that I really think Trump is the right man, he is not afraid to clearly and publicly address issues like immigration. There are two significant trends that we've had here over the last 30-plus years. One of them is wage stagnation. Anybody in journalism, I don't respect many or any of them really, but can track down the fact that wages have been virtually level, unchanged, for the last 30-plus years. Well, you don't have to be Donald Trump or an economist or anybody, really, to figure out that if wages stagnate that much, it's because we have now a massive oversupply of unskilled labor in the country.
And there are people who will disagree with that, including economists, and we're not going to get into all the details of what parts of the economy it's more true in than others, but there are those who say that that's not the primary factor holding wages down. But, Ken, I appreciate your call, and I thank you very much for that, and it certainly is a widespread reason for people supporting Donald Trump. Let's go to Adam in Westchester County, just north of New York City. Hi, Adam.
Hey,
you're on the air. We got about a minute for you before we have to take a break. Hey.
All right. Hey, how are you? Really quickly, never been a Trump supporter until recently. Small business owner in Westchester County. We do custom printed T-shirts. We ship out nationally. And long story short, in New York, I'm going to have to move my business out of the state within the next 2 years anyway, just to avoid the $15 an hour minimum wage. And if I can't move over to Jersey or anything like that, minimum wages increases in the rest of the country. I basically have no competitive advantage, and I'm already at
a disadvantage.
So there's that minimum wage issue again for another small business owner. Adam, thank you. It's our convention call-in on money, and we'll continue in a minute.
Stay tuned. You're listening to a special live call-in show with Brian Lehrer on the second night of the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. Stay with WNYC for continuing live coverage from NPR and a PBS at 8. Following the final speaker tonight, share your reactions in a national call-in special from The Takeaway. And be sure to tune in tomorrow for highlights and analysis on Morning Edition and The Brian Lehrer Show at 10 right here on WNYC. For the rest of tonight, mostly clear skies with a low around 67, and then tomorrow, Wednesday, another sunny and hot day, the high getting up to about 83 degrees. It's 7:20.
WNYC support comes from GEICO, celebrating over 75 years of providing auto insurance for drivers across America. More information on auto insurance available at geico.com or 1-800-947-AUTO. WNYC is a media partner for the New York Moth Story Slam, a storytelling competition featuring stories on the theme of water, Thursday, July 21st at Housing Works. Details at themoth.org.
From WNYC in New York, this is a convention call-in. I'm Brian Lehrer. Our topic tonight is money and the middle class. We'll keep taking calls for a few more minutes from Trump supporters who think he'll be good for expanding middle class prosperity. And then we'll flip the script and talk to some Trump skeptics. But Trump supporters on the economy, 1-800-543-2-543, 1-800-543-2-543. Here's an example of how Trump attracted some independent voters in the primary season along these lines. In this CBS Face the Nation interview last August, he might as well have been Bernie Sanders in the way he juxtaposed hedge fund managers and middle class folks.
I want to save the middle class. You know, the middle class, the hedge funds guys didn't build this country. These are guys that shift paper around and they get lucky. And by the way, when the market collapses like it is now, the market's going down, they're losing a fortune. Half of them, look, they're energetic, they're very smart, but a lot of them, it's like they're paper pushers. They make a fortune. They pay no tax. It's ridiculous, okay? And some of them are friends of mine. Some of them I couldn't care less about. It's the wrong thing. The hedge fund guys are getting away with murder. They're making a tremendous amount of money. They have to pay tax. I want to lower the rates for the middle class. The middle class is the one. They're getting absolutely destroyed. This country won't have a middle class very soon.
Trump on Face the Nation last August. Here's Hillary Clinton, though, in a speech last month, comparing that particular Trump rhetoric to how she sees his tax plan, which came later.
Before releasing his plan, Trump said, hedge fund guys are getting away with murder. And he added, they'll pay more. Then his plan came out. And it actually makes the current loophole even worse. It gives hedge fund managers a special tax rate that's lower than what many middle-class families pay. And I did have to look twice because I didn't believe it. Under Donald Trump's plan, these Wall Street millionaires will pay a lower tax rate than many working people. And of course, Donald himself would get a huge tax cut from his own plan. But we don't know exactly how much because he won't release his tax returns.
Hillary Clinton last month. With us for a few minutes, as more of your calls are coming in, is Tony Beam. He hosts a radio show called Christian Worldview, based in Greenville, South Carolina. Tony, thanks for coming on this radio show for a few minutes. Happy Convention Week.
Well, happy Convention Week to you. It's a pleasure to be on. Thanks for having me.
And we invited you because we thought with your audience, you could be kind of a cultural translator for some of our listeners in urban centers like New York and Washington who are part of this audience. When Trump says he's going to save the middle class, like in that clip, how much do you think your listeners hear this in cultural as well as purely economic terms?
Well, I think that it's very cultural when it comes to Donald Trump. I think the persona of who Donald Trump is more powerful than any kind of tax plan that he would release. I doubt that there's been a lot of analysis by the everyday voter, and I don't mean to be disparaging. I'm just simply saying that most people living their lives are not going to take the time to go and work through the details of a tax plan by any presidential candidate. So Donald Trump's ability to draw middle class support is based on the fact that people hear him. He's different. He says some pretty outrageous things. They're angry at the government. They are angry at the way things are going right now in the economy as a whole. Donald Trump says he's going to fix it. He says this in cryptic phrases that are easy to remember and are effective in getting people to believe that he's got a plan that'll make things better.
Is that why you think that some of your listeners trust Trump to represent them against the hedge funders' privilege, if you want to put it that way, more than a liberal Democrats' argument? Because the liberals really disdain the hedge fund economy. Trump's background is that he's in that high roller investor class, though he talked against them in that clip.
Well, I do find that to be an interesting paradox for me personally. When I, as I was listening on hold, as I was listening to the comparison between what Hillary Clinton was saying and Donald Trump was saying, I couldn't help but think both of these candidates are millionaires. And of course, Donald Trump is, by all accounts, a billionaire. But certainly Hillary Clinton is a millionaire and a very powerful one. So I'm not sure. I really think that the reason people latch on to Trump is because Hillary's been around for a long time. She is the consummate, ultimate outsider. She actually, I heard her say recently that she's the ultimate insider because she's a woman running for office. Outsider,
right,
because she's a female running for office, and I found that to be remarkable. I don't think people buy that, and I think Trump's entire popularity, at least the most of it, is on the fact that people are angry at the government. They're angry at the way things are going in the country. Trump's not part of the inside, so he must be the guy that's going to come in from the outside and fix it.
Tony Beam hosts a radio show called Christian Worldview, based in Greenville, South Carolina. Thanks so much for giving us a few minutes.
Sure. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Back to more of you who are Trump supporters for economic reasons, and we'll flip the script in a few minutes and go to Trump skeptics for economic reasons. Marie in Queens, New York City. You're on the air. Hi, Marie.
Hi. Thanks for accepting my call.
Sure. Tell me a little bit about your story.
Well, my story is that, you know, I'm an immigrant myself. Came here when I was 6 years old, a single mom, lived in Harlem, and my mother worked really hard, two jobs. She did her due diligence to move out of, you know, a poor neighborhood and, put us through, you know, my brother and I through school. I'm a successful businesswoman now with four children and all graduated from college. And there's a sense of appreciation for what this country had to offer, mm-hmm. as long as you work hard and you just have that responsibility towards this country and appreciation. And I think that there's a lot of people that come to this country and they milk the system, and a lot of people are upset and angry. I was not a Trump supporter in the beginning because of his intimidating rhetoric, but he's angry. And when you're angry, you know, unfortunately, you do use that kind of those kinds of words.
Who are you most angry at? Is it the people who are here illegally?
Yes, I'm upset about that because when we came to this country, my mother, my brother, and I, we came in legally.
Marie, thank you very much, and best of luck to you. John in Falls Church, Virginia, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Good evening, Brian.
Trump supporter?
Yes, sir.
For economic reasons?
Actually, I think it's better to describe me as I support some of Trump's positions, not necessarily him alone. One thing I wanted to talk about is the trade agreements. I've seen in the debates that have been going on recently, when he talked about either scrapping or renegotiating some of the trade pacts like NAFTA, people come back and say, well, NAFTA's worth X amount of billions of dollars to the U.S. And that may be true, but you have to see where that money is going. It's true, a lot of people are employed handling those goods that come in. However, a lot of that is low-wage jobs, working, you know, driving a forklift in a logistics center, or, you know, working at Home Depot or Best Buy or Walmart. Your listeners should just walk over to their television set real quick and look on the back of it and look where it says it's made. And I will bet you dollars to donuts, almost all of them say made in Mexico.
Now, a lot of experts are saying that
one of the
John, let me follow up for a sec. A lot of experts are saying that he's not going to bring those jobs back, that there's no trade deal that he can make that's going to make that television set start to get manufactured in the United States again.
Well, if the provisions of NAFTA were actually enforced, the reason I was saying look at the back and it'll say made in Mexico is the fact that it's really not made in Mexico. The final assembly is in Mexico. The component parts are almost all made in China. They're shipped to Mexico. The final assembly is done, and then they're shipped up north. So the only thing they're doing is making – they're touching down in Mexico, basically, so that they can take advantage of NAFTA. If we simply eliminated the preference for the things that are that go through final assembly in Mexico, then the Chinese are going to say, well, or the manufacturer is going to say, well, why don't we do our final assembly in the U.S.
and save the shipping costs? So really, you're giving me what, and again, I can't fact check this, but you're giving me what you believe to be, and maybe it is, a very specific example of a specific item in NAFTA that advantages building televisions in Mexico with parts that might even be shipped out from here and then selling them back here. Correct?
No, most of the parts are still coming from China.
I see.
But it's the reason that that they're making the large maquiladoras down on the border area and farther into Mexico.
Mm-hmm, those plants.
Is simply because it's very easy, because they're just final assembly plants. They're not doing primary manufacture.
So why wouldn't they just come in from China if, let's say, NAFTA were to go away all of a sudden?
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't China just finish the job and send them over here, maybe even cheaper?
No, they could send them into the U.S., but the reason that they don't just send them into the U.S. is because they can get preferential treatment for the products coming in from Mexico.
John, I gotcha, and I appreciate it very much. Thank you very much. Let's go to Bill in Berkeley Heights, New Jersey next. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
Okay. How about you?
I'm good. I'm an interesting case. I could probably be a skeptic caller and a supporter caller at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I have my problems and my qualms with Donald, but I guess from an economic standpoint, I liked your caller that had that he kind of crystallized what I thought about economics. The one who owned the Burger King franchise.
Uh-huh.
I thought he did a nice job of explaining why businesses just can't willy-nilly raise their minimum wage. Unfortunately, they have to compete in the real world, and the government doesn't.
Do you also own a retail outlet or a restaurant?
I do not. I actually, you know what? Like a lot of the problems, like with the wage being suppressed or being kept down because of, you know, they say so-called migrants are coming in. That wouldn't really affect me because of, you know, I mean, I work for a big company and I do like tech work,
mm-hmm.
so it's specialized. I don't think, you know, the economics, at least most things probably wouldn't affect me very much. But you know, I am kind of an entrepreneur at heart. I would like to get into that. And if, you know, I mean, I would, but, you know, not if, if I hear horror stories about, you know, government sort of mandating minimum wages, and if it's really hurting companies, I would think twice about getting mm-hmm. in, at least in certain states.
And is there something about Trump in particular, or because that's kind of the standard Republican position that all the candidates in the party, is it just more that you line up with the party in this case?
You know, it's funny. You know, you're kind of right about that, right? So, like, what is Trump going to do about this? Maybe nothing. You know, I mean, he hasn't really said, I don't know how much he's really spoken about this. He hasn't really said much about it. So I'm sort of talking out my ear here because I don't even know if he could do anything or if he would do anything. I am for a limited government in general. I mean, Trump is sort of this, not necessarily that either. That's why I'm sort of on the fence with him, you know? I mean, not that I'm any kind of neoconservative or anything. I like his intuitions. He's a businessman, and presumably he knows business and would and can see some of the right. The hazards in,
yes.
I guess, so legislating.
Yeah, so it's not looking at the ABCs of a policy, but there's a trust factor because of his background and because of his way compared to Hillary Clinton.
I would say that's accurate, you know.
And, Bill, I'm going to leave it there and get some other folks on. I really appreciate it. Call us again, okay?
Thanks a lot.
And Ricardo in Rockland County, New York. You're on the air. Hi, Ricardo.
Oh, hello, Brian. Great to be on. Thank you.
Thank you. So what's your story?
So I'm a recent college graduate, and I'm originally a Pataki supporter, but he didn't make it too long in the primary process, so I switched over to Trump and voted for him for the New York primaries.
I knew there was one Pataki supporter somewhere in the Republican primary season. Now we found you.
Absolutely. And I just think that Donald Trump's policies are the response to failed liberalism. So you see, you know, the last 25 years of liberalism, and on a global level, they haven't quite been working. So you start seeing this rise of right-wing parties like Marine Le Pen and, you know, Alternative for Deutschland. But you also see the rise of extreme leftist movements like Bernie Sanders and Syriza in Greece.
A lot of people say that Trump is like Le Pen in France and those European nationalist parties.
And the Slavic philosopher Slobo Jivic says that ultimately, because of the failures of liberalism, you'll get that right wing populism. Even though it may not give you all the solutions you want or need, you'll end up having this as the response.
Mm-hmm.
And each time there's any of these incidents and are these things, it keeps reinforcing that point. Same thing with Brexit. You see these individuals economically aligning themselves to those interests.
And so for yourself, do you wind up aligned to those interests and believing in them, or do you want to somehow save liberalism from its failures?
Well, it's a two-point solution. I think number one is he's against H-1B visas, which would directly benefit me as a college-educated individual in the technical fields of finance and computers.
Now, the H-1B visas are for people who are skilled, who we would bring into this country because they have skills that employers want, right? So that would compete with you as a tech person and a college graduate.
Absolutely. And the issue is for tech work, a lot of these jobs they'll do on the job hiring, these very below below average wages for someone with that skill set. And it's because they're trying to target it more to H-1B sponsorship individuals.
Ricardo, thanks a lot, and I'm going to leave it there for now. We appreciate your call. Now, folks, let's flip the script and invite Trump economy skeptics to call in. Screeners, clear the board. With apologies to those Trump supporters we haven't gotten to. We'll take more of you tomorrow night in this hour. So next, if you do not buy that Trump will make the middle class great again, or make America rich again, call in and tell us why this isn't working for you. And you can, if you want to, tell us why you think Hillary Clinton would be better at it. 1-800-543-2543. Very simple. 1-800, count it down, 543-2543. Trump economy skeptics, it's now your turn. If you do not buy that Trump will make the middle class great again or make America rich again, and you just heard a whole bunch of callers from different states and different economic strata call and say why they think he will, call in and tell us why you think he won't. And part two is optional. Tell us why you think Hillary Clinton would be better at it as a candidate, as a president herself, 1-800-543-2543. I'm Brian Lehrer with this convention call-in, and we'll continue in just 1 minute.
Stay tuned. You're listening to a special live call-in show with Brian Lehrer on the second night of the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. Stay with WNYC for continuing live coverage from NPR and PBS at 8. And following the final speaker tonight, call in and share your reactions in a national call-in special from The Takeaway. And be sure to tune in tomorrow for highlights and analysis on Morning Edition and The Brian Lehrer Show at 10 here on WNYC. And you can follow all of our election coverage until November online at WNYC.org/election. Mostly clear for tonight with a low around 67. Right now, though, 81 and mostly clear. This is WNYC at 740.
WNYC receives support from Blue Point Brewing Company, brewers of toasted lager, an amber lager made with a blend of six malts. More information at bluepointbrewing.com. WNYC is a media partner of the Public Theater, presenting the summer season of Free Shakespeare in Central Park. Troilus and Cressida, now through August 14th. Information at publictheater.org.
From WNYC in New York, this is a convention call-in. I'm Brian Lehrer. Our topic tonight is the middle class. Tomorrow it'll be about race, Thursday night about war. Right now our lines are open for skeptics about Donald Trump's ability to bring more prosperity and expand the middle class. 1-800-543-2543. And while your calls are coming in, here is a Trump skeptic who's been mayor of Bogota, New Jersey. He's been a New Jersey state leader of the conservative Koch brothers group, Americans for Prosperity. He was the New Jersey state chairman for the Ted Cruz presidential campaign, and he is a diehard member of the Never Trump movement. Oh, and his line just dropped out. Ha ha. How about that? So, well, we'll go to we have plenty of callers who are Trump skeptics, so we'll start with some of you, and then we'll go to Steve Lonigan. Kevin in Manhattan, you're on the air. Hi, Kevin. Kevin, you there? All right, no, Kevin. Let's try Christian in Fort Reading, New Jersey. Christian, do we have you?
Hello, yes. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, thanks for calling.
So I just listened to that whole segment. I have a lot of things I could comment on. I know I have limited time, so I'll begin by saying that Trump was born wealthy, and he's a reality TV star, and he's created this impression of being a success. I don't know how middle-class people think he represents them. He is not one of them. And he has not been very transparent about his net worth. It seems as though it may not be what it appears to be. He's had lots of failed business ventures. He's shown time and again that he's much more concerned with profit and how well he does and not so much concerned with the human impact of his bankruptcies like what happened in Atlantic City here in New Jersey. I do not think that keeping the minimum wage stagnant is going to destroy the economy. If anything, I think paying people not a slave wage to do a job, paying them a decent wage for a hard day's work will put more money in consumers' pockets that they'll then be able to spend at these businesses. And on a note that really doesn't have anything to do with the economy, these are not my own words, but this election really is a referendum on decency, and Trump is just not a decent man. He may be authentic. He may give off the impression of authenticity, but it is important what he says when he's being authentic, what he actually believes, what comes out of his mouth.
Christian, thank you very much. And in fact, we'll be getting more into that aspect of this election campaign on tomorrow night's convention call. And here is a clip of Trump kind of addressing some of the things that Christian was talking about at the beginning of that call in terms of Trump actually being a model individually for success nationally.
I built a phenomenal business with incredible, iconic assets, one of the really, truly great real estate businesses. And I may be an entertainer because I've had tremendous success with number one bestsellers all over the place, with The Apprentice and everything else I've done. But I will tell you this, what I am far and away greater than an entertainer is a businessman. And that's the kind of mindset this country needs to bring it back. Because we owe $19 trillion right now, $19 trillion. And you need this kind of thinking to bring our country back. And believe me, we will be respected outside of this country. We are not respected now.
And you know who's not buying that, that very specific statement? Hillary Clinton, of course.
Donald Trump has said he's qualified to be president because of his business record. A few days ago, he said, and I quote, "I'm going to do for the country what I did for my business." So let's take a look at what he did for his business. He's written a lot of books about business. They all seem to end at chapter 11. And over the years, he intentionally ran up huge amounts of debt on his companies, and then he defaulted. He bankrupted his companies not once, not twice, but four times. Hundreds of people lost their jobs. Shareholders were wiped out. Contractors, many of them small businesses, took heavy losses. Many went bust. But Donald Trump, he came out fine. Here's what he said about one of those bankruptcies. "I figured it was the bank's problem, not mine. What the hell did I care?" He also says, "I play with bankruptcy." Everything seems to be a game with him. Well, it isn't for a lot of us, is it?
All right. We heard Trump touting his background in business as a qualification for running the country successfully on the economic level. Hillary Clinton pushing back on why not. If you're just joining us on this convention call-in, we took calls for the first 40 minutes from Trump supporters for economic reasons. It's his convention, after all. And for this last section, we're taking calls primarily from Trump skeptics. And with us now is Steve Lonergan, who's been mayor of Bogota, New Jersey, a New Jersey state leader of the Koch Brothers Group, Americans for Prosperity, and New Jersey state chairman for the Ted Cruz campaign, as well as a diehard member of the Never Trump movement. Steve, nice to talk to you again. Thank you for coming on.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So as a conservative, pro-business kind of guy, why are you so opposed to the businessman candidate?
Because one of the most important components of true economic growth and true economic prosperity is real free trade. Free trade has been the gateway, not just to prosperity, but to peace and understanding between people. You know, Donald Trump opposes free trade. He can make all the excuses he wants about how he wants to have better deals. But when he talks about NAFTA being a bad deal for this country, that's utterly false. After NAFTA, we saw a narrowing of the income gap. We saw growth in American jobs. We saw great economic prosperity when Canada, Mexico, and the United States joined together to trade with one another as one big, huge, you know, hundreds of, you know, several billion people trading with one another. That's what business is about. And Donald Trump seems to think that his isolationist theory, his philosophy is very much in line with Bernie Sanders, are going to grow economic prosperity, and that's absolutely not the case.
What about the logic that sounds logical to a lot of people, which is that if there aren't trade barriers, then a company like Ford, he singled out Ford the other day in a speech introducing Mike Pence, moves a plant to Mexico because they can make the cars cheaper, then they'll bring them back in here to sell, and they could be making them in Michigan otherwise.
Because consumers are harmed when prices are forced through the roof to pay artificially high prices. And when I say artificially high prices, what I mean is that in the world of economics, if people understand economics, there's a theory called the comparative advantage. Comparative advantage means that some countries have a better ability to do certain things than other countries. There's a lot of low-income, low-paid labor in Mexico than perform tasks that we're not going to do in this country because our workers don't want to do it, or our workers are better off doing high-skilled labor, work that requires more education.
If there are enough of those jobs to go around for a country of 300 million people.
But But Brian, one of the things I did at Americans for a Prosperity, I've lectured extensively on economic issues, and I'll go into a room filled with a bunch of people who say they want to bring back manufacturing jobs. And it's very simple, and I ask you to do this if you're ever in front of an audience. You say, how many people want your grandchildren or children to be engineers? They raise their hand. Doctors, they raise their hand. Lawyers, they raise their hand. Scientists, they raise their hand. How many of you want your kids working on an assembly line? Not one person in the room will ever raise their hand. They just don't want to do this. There's nothing wrong with trade. And by the way, manufacturing jobs, Brian, are down all around the world due to technology and robotics, which is coming out of this country. Mm-hmm. This country is more responsible for having less manufacturing jobs in Indonesia than any other country in the world, because we've produced a technology that has eliminated those jobs, something we should be striving for.
Steve Lenigan, I'm going to leave it there and get some other folks on. I thank you very much. We will talk again. And we did invite one more Trump supporter to call in, and we're going to give her shot. She is Cherie Corso, a small business owner, founder of G2 Organics in Pelham, New York, just north of New York City. And hi, Cherie. Thanks very much for coming on with us. Whoops. Oh, do we have her? Cherie, hi.
I'm really excited. I just want to say something to your last caller. Did you hear the nomination of Donald J. Trump? So much for his campaign to stop Trump.
It definitely failed, that Stop Trump campaign. So tell us about your business. What products or services do you sell? How many people do you employ?
Okay, I have to tell you, my business is called G2 Organics, and it is all natural organic beauty products sold all over the country. And I started this business with one thing in mind, and that was to get better products into the hands of people. I've been doing this for 5 years. This is my second business. I was just on the cover of Hat Trick magazine. I sent that to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been also quoted in every almost major business publication supporting Trump. And I have to say one thing that every entrepreneur out there knows: it's not easy. I've knocked on doors until I've had bloody knuckles. We have to overcome obstacles. We have to get this economy going again. When people have money in their pocket, they want to spend. They want to go down to their local businesses and support.
And so why Trump?
Trump, it's a movement that has invigorated the economy already. Even at the GOP convention, anyone that's selling anything with Trump is selling out like crazy. I mean, people are even making money there. He employs the most people. He creates jobs. And that's what it's all about in this country, moving it forward.
And you've been hearing some of the critics the last few minutes. Trump is a selfish narcissist who'll sell out his employees and customers if it'll make him an extra buck. And he knows how to run a business, but that doesn't mean he knows how to run an economy for the good
of
everybody.
Let me tell you something.
Tell me something.
People are criticizing Donald Trump for bankruptcy. That's what the United States of America, it's a law. And he took advantage of the law to start free, wipe out debt, and build it. And that's what separates the United States from other countries around the world. We're all about doing the impossible. Donald Trump has sprinkled pixie dust on this country, and we are excited and we are invigorated. I met Donald Trump at the Trump Tower, and my business with G2 Organics, I have, it's all about the energy also that comes from the earth and that's in the products. And I also sell crystals for good luck and energy, and I gave one to Donald Trump, and you can see the picture on my website, G2 Organics, and he got it. He's a high energy person. He lights up the room.
And that gives people optimism.
A great organization. Mm-hmm. Not everybody that votes for him is a racist, is wrong, and we all want the same thing. We all want this country to be secure, to save, to make money.
And Cherie, I'm going to leave it there as the last word. Thank you so much for chiming in. And back to a few more Trump skeptics in the Trump skeptic portion of the hour for the most part. And let's see what Mary in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware has to say. Hi, Mary.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
I just wanted to call because when I was listening to the gentleman who owned the two Burger King restaurants, that kind of Trump supporter frightens me because he sounds so very reasonable. And I've been in business for a long time, and I have a completely different opinion about the minimum wage. I do not believe that raising the minimum wage would hurt this economy. First, he said he had two Burger King franchises. Well, if his labor costs go up, all his competitors have the same labor costs. They all go up, so he's not at any competitive disadvantage. And then also, it creates more customers for his product because if people are making a higher wage, they can afford to buy his product. So I just think when people haven't been in business, someone who sounds mm-hmm. so reasonable but who's mm-hmm. leaving out certain mm-hmm. concepts mm-hmm. in business can fool other people.
Mary, I'm going to leave it there. I thank you very much. And we go to another skeptic, Beth in Annapolis, Maryland. Hi, Beth. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, I couldn't agree more with your previous caller. I also was really struck by the first caller's kind of, you know, typical Trump Republican argument.
The Burger King owner who's against the minimum wage.
Yeah, I was hoping that you would challenge him a bit. First, he says that he's making $1.6 million a year, presumably in revenues, one of the most profitable franchises in the country. And then he said that he can't, but that his reason for not being able to raise the wages of his employees is that they're not making $12 worth of revenues in 1 hour, which just flies in the face of reason.
Beth,
I just would have loved for you to challenge him on that.
Beth, thank you very much for doing it. Elizabeth in D.C., you're on the air. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
So I'm calling because I'm a school teacher, but previous to my career in teaching, I didn't become a teacher until my 40s. I teach middle school. I was an entrepreneur, and owning a business is extremely difficult, hard work if you do it for the love of it because you believe in it. And as a teacher, just reflecting back on Donald Trump's behavior, just his personality, I have occasionally a student in my classroom who is like Donald Trump. We call them a bully. They're the kids we have to take out in the hallway and express our concern about their behavior and have to try to manage them and keep them so that they're not overpowering the other citizens of your classroom.
So if we translate this into global economics, some Trump
right.
supporters might say the U.S. hasn't been enough of a bully on the economic stage, or too much of a wimp, if that's the opposite of bully, and it's time for us to throw our weight around a little bit more, and Trump would say strike better trade deals. What would your argument against that be?
Well, we're in a global economy now, and we need to think of the whole world in terms of how one domino affects the next. And this business about we're going to make America great again, America is great now. America is an amazing place. All you have to do is go anywhere else to know this as an American citizen. And so when I look at Donald Trump and his you know, self-centered approach to things, it just breaks my heart. It breaks my heart because he doesn't keep his promises. He's not going to keep his promise to America. All of these small businesses and large businesses who helped make Donald Trump who he is, who built his, you know, casinos and hotels and vineyards and all these other things that he has, he's opted to go mm-hmm. into bankruptcy. And those people,
yes,
those hardworking, honest Americans got cheated.
And Elizabeth, that is going to be the last word from you and from anybody this hour, because that's our first 2016 convention call-in tonight on the topic of money. So thank you, Trump supporters. Thank you, Trump detractors. Thank you, everyone who just listened. We'll do another one of these tomorrow night in this hour on the topic of race. I'm Brian Lehrer. Stay tuned for Republican Convention primetime coverage coming up next.